Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
Maybe those trade-offs inside were building up over time. And there were ways that I would do things that probably visibly looked incredibly selfish, actually, as a teenager. I had a rebellious streak, too. And that's what I meant when I said, if you asked mom, she probably wouldn't say it. I would do things that what she wanted for me. But I think ultimately in decision-making, I would know this. I think some of these choices I was making were really taking its toll. And they're always fairly aligned with, I think, my own needs, I guess, whether that's emotionally or any other way. And so I think in this case, listening, that kind of listening to your body or listening to, you know, the fact that, hey, you're actually at the first time in your life, it's hard for you to get out of bed, right? The choice to leave, spend some time in California, get to know my dad again, those types of things really were these needs and relating my needs much more than if I to have just toughed it out and stayed on at school. So that was probably one of the biggest moments I could think of in my life because of the potential magnitudes of a choice like that. I literally remember my cousin calling me after, you know, everyone in the family found out that I had just withdrawn from school. Wait. Oh. And I remember him, you know, being on the phone with me, and he's actually a couple years younger than me, but he's mature through his own life experiences that I think really shaped him. And he's been more like a sibling, but I remember him calling me and saying, statistics show that when you withdraw from school, you know, most don't go back. And I don't remember the exact statistics he quoted, but I'm sure, you know, he had he was really worried that, hey, I'd drop out of school and not go back.
What happens when the biggest pressure you face isn't from family, your teachers, or your boss, but it's actually from yourselves? Saylin Hong grew up as a first-generation daughter of a hardworking immigrant mom, carrying the weight of expectations to achieve and prove that her sacrifice was worth it. She checked all the boxes. She went to college, law school, spent 13 years as an attorney. On the outside, it looked like success. On the inside, she felt a little lost. In this conversation, Saylin opens up about the messy moments of realizing that the pressure she put on herself outweighed any that came from her upbringing, and how loosening that grip became her turning point. When she discovered that she could follow her own path, she learned that real success doesn't come from living up to someone else's script. It really comes from writing your very own. Saylin began her career journey as an attorney, specializing in labor and employment matters before discovering her true passion for unlocking human potential and driving organizational transformation. Now, in her second chapter, leading HR at a global organization, she brings a rare blend of legal acumen, strategic vision, analytical rigor, and people-centered leadership to guiding change at scale. Saylin's a lifelong learner. She's driven by a deep belief that the most powerful transformations begin and end with people, that when individuals grow to their full potential, organizations flourish. She leads with purpose, curiosity, and empathy, championing cultures where people feel seen, heard, valued, and inspired to do their best work. Outside of work, Saylin is a whole human, finding joy in time with her husband, Joe, and with their two kids, Wyatt and Ava, as well as connecting with friends. She loves trying new restaurants, attending live concerts, and exploring the great outdoors. Her journey is one of continuous evolution, rooted in her values, courage, connection, and the conviction that real transformation starts from within. I'm so delighted you're here today, Saylin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Alexa.
I'm so excited for you to share some of your insights from your life's path with our listeners. And usually we drop in a tougher part. So what is one messy moment over the course of your career or life that you feel like the listeners might be able to identify with?
I would say that if I think about the common theme in them, there are a few that stand out, really, whether that's during college, for example, or law school, or somewhere along the time that I spent about 13 years practicing law. And I think in the messy moments, so the one that stands out the most, and I think they really led to some turning points for me, it was just this sense of feeling lost.
You're in college, young adulthood, and then I hear, wow, through law school, you practice law. That's a big deal. In my mind, I am always like, wow, that's a really accomplished person. But now I hear you saying you felt lost.
I almost feel like these messy moments were meant to be a culmination versus one moment that's turning point. I almost felt like they built on each other. So I'd say first messy moment I could think of in my life was during college, where I really started to feel lost in terms of, is this the right path for me? In terms of what I was focused on in school around my junior year of college, actually. And so I started to really think about where I'm headed after college. And really a personal event that I think triggered the messiness and the questions in my mind, because I think I was somebody that would go through the motions often, that there's a path that I should follow. I was really driven by obligation. I think that was just my upbringing. I am from a Korean immigrant family. And I had a mother who was quite traditional in terms of her viewpoints of things to do in life and focused on education, which I really appreciated. And at the same time, you know, certain careers are the right careers, let's say. On top of that, I also came from a single parent household. I have many wonderful memories with my dad when I was very young. Really, it was when I was starting middle school that he moved to California, and I grew up in New York. And wasn't really a big part of our lives, if at all. I would say maybe an annual phone call, really, right? And it's really my mother who was the one who raised us from that point on, from a present perspective, being there for us and providing, and also even just financial providing. So she was a working mother. And I think just even leading up to the point of my dad moving, I would say that was already where my mother was the provider, and she was the one who was around all the time. Some point, the biggest change was when my dad sort of moved, right? And then at that point, it was a big turning point in terms of ingraining in me certain lessons, true or not. I think really what I took from that was I have to be extremely self-reliant, and working hard is really critical. My mother worked probably the hardest worker I've observed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was by choice, right? But she was somebody who worked night shift as a nurse, and would come home after not sleeping. And then looking back, now that I have kids especially too, I think about some of the things she would do and how exhausted she must have been. But she would sometimes even drive us to school.
She pulled it off, yeah.
Yeah, some of those moments really instilled certain mindsets in me, choices and the choices that I should be making. And I also was very much wanting to, in some ways, ensure that my mom and her sacrifices meant something. And I really very much wanted to do what I'm supposed to do, in a sense. I found ways to have fun on the side when I could.
You're just painting a beautiful but hard picture. I think watching a family and you as a young girl, watching your mom sacrifice so much, work so hard, and clearly you're picking up, the message is I have to work hard. The message is I need to take good care of myself, honor my mother's sacrifice, and not let all that hard stuff go to waste. And all of those things played into, you said something that like there was a moment when you were in college and you were feeling a little lost. You were like, maybe I'm not doing the right thing. So tell me a little bit more about how those early moments culminated into kind of that signal that you got.
I think for many people, the worst case scenario for people is losing someone you love. So for me, the moment when I was a junior in college, I got a phone call. It was from a family member, and they were just sharing with me that my dad had gotten diagnosis and it was stage 4 cancer. And they literally said that he had 3 months or so to live, or anticipated prognosis or their prognosis. And so that was a big jarring moment for me, because just given some of the history I shared, he hadn't been a big part of my life. And so I almost felt like, oh, I'm going to have a chance to know my dad. I have very early childhood memories. I think a big, big chunk of my life, I have many memories. And I think the concept that I would not really know my dad, because by that point we were very distant. I didn't speak with him much at all, if at all, really, on average for a year. And so I do remember it was the first time in my life where I felt that I really wasn't that functional. I think I would have memories of being in my dorm room and just being in bed all day, which really was not myself, right? So I don't have medical therapy, but I think probably that would have been the point where I potentially was experiencing some form of depression.
If you think about you building up in your own mind, what's good? I need to get the right job. I need to be self-reliant. I need to study the right things. I need to work hard. I need to, I have obligations. And then finding that you're not functioning the way you always had, and probably rightfully so in such a tough circumstance, it must have been pretty disconcerting because you may have felt like, who am I?
It was really disconcerting for sure. And it really made me question also what was important, why I was assigning importance to certain things. And I'm sure many people experience this. And I do think everybody at some point experiences loss and may go through, you know, moments like this, right? And so for me, I think it was a point in life where I really deeply questioned some of my longstanding beliefs, and it was making choices. And the picture I painted earlier wasn't as simple as it may have been painted, because I certainly had a lot of also rebellious moments and ways to assert my independence or freedom.
Testing the edges.
Yeah,
maybe.
Like dating people my mom absolutely hated and who I liked, right? Or picking the school I wanted to go to, things like that. There are ways that I tried to, within those boundaries, assert some limits and express myself. And honestly, I think there was also some underlying resentment buildup too. And back, I think probably more control than I realized, where I could have still made different choices, but I think much of this was self-imposed on myself too.
It sounds to me like you had some strong mindsets happening in here that said, okay, this thing that I'm about to do, date this guy over here my mom hates, is super, super rebellious. When really, she might not have liked him. But you felt like it was a big act probably to do this thing. And now looking back, you're like, gosh, I could have actually just done it. And it wasn't such a big act of rebellion. But it sounds like by the time you were faced with something pretty harrowing, the news of your father's cancer, when you hadn't seen him in years, and there's a lot of feelings there, led you to rethink a lot of things in a big way, as opposed to doing these little tests of the edges of the mindset.
Very true. I did make a decision looking back that I'm actually glad I made at the time was extremely scary. I did end up taking some time off of school, and I was going to the dean's office to withdraw in the middle of the semester. And, you know, one of the first things I did was fly out to LA and spend time with my dad, be there as long as I wanted to, because I did have to find a job. I was on work study at the time, and I did end up finding a job back in New York, which is where I grew up and where my mom was. So I did that and ultimately had to reapply and to go to school. To me, that was actually a huge decision.
Pretty big deal.
And especially given my background as well.
I'm almost imagining you going up to the admissions office or whatever office it is and being like, I'm withdrawing. And that feels heavy. What was that like in that moment as you were, everything that you had told yourself was important, which is to be a hard worker, be dependable, fulfill your obligations? What was that like?
It was incredibly scary and at the same time felt empowering. There's all these complex emotions happening, right? I felt guilty. I felt, oh, everything my mom had sacrificed to send me to school, and it was an expensive college, almost the culmination of her efforts to, you know, as an immigrant parent who really focused on her kids. I think it was just this huge mix of emotions. And at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, I felt like I didn't have a choice to. It actually started the framework or the development of the framework I often use when I make really hard decisions. It's really simple. I just ask myself, what will I regret more? And I think in this moment, my question to myself was, worst case scenario happens, dad doesn't make it, and maybe even less time, because you really, there's no magic number. I think it's just an estimate or approximation of, right? And so I really didn't know what to expect at that point in terms of how his health was. And so, except that it was really serious. And so I thought to myself, well, what if something happened next week or next month? What would I regret more? I know this is scary. Or what would I regret not doing Because sometimes it's about like actions and proactive actions, but sometimes it's also,
well, how can I live with myself?
What you didn't do. Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that was a helpful framework. And at the same time, it was also a decision for myself, right? So it wasn't just about going to see my dad and spending some time with him while he's sick. It was also, in some ways, I think, putting my own needs. I think if you had met me growing up as a teenager, like I definitely had that teenage streak and I wasn't, like, you know, I asked my mom, she probably wouldn't say I was Miss, you know, perfect child. I felt that I was actually putting my own needs first. And I don't think that would have been visible to anyone else. I don't think anyone else have any sense, like for all of us, what our own needs might be on the outside. The choices I was making wouldn't be obvious to people in terms of she may be doing that, you know, because she's wanting to make sure someone else is happy, or
they would never know the trade-off you were making.
Exactly. Right. And I think those trade-offs inside were building up over time. And there were ways that I would do things that probably visibly looked incredibly selfish, actually, as a teenager. I had a rebellious streak, too. I wasn't, and that's what I meant when I said, if you asked mom, she probably wouldn't say. I would do things that, what she wanted for me. But I think ultimately in decision-making, I would know this. I think some of these choices I was making were really taking its toll, and they're always thoroughly aligned with, I think, my own needs, I guess, whether that's emotionally or any other way. And so I think in this case, listening, that concept of listening to your body, or listening to, you know, the fact that, hey, you're actually at the first time in your life, it's hard for you to get out of bed, right? Like listening to your body, listening to how you're feeling. I think the choice to leave, spend some time in California, get to know my dad again, those types of things really were these needs and relating my needs much more than if I to have just toughed it out and stayed on at school. So that was probably one of the biggest moments I could think of in my life because of the potential magnitudes of a choice like that. I literally remember my cousin calling me after, you know, everyone in the family found out that I had just withdrawn from school. And I remember him, you know, being on the phone with me. And he's actually a couple of years younger than me, but he's mature through his own life experiences that I think really shaped him. And he's been more like a sibling. But I remember him calling me and saying, statistics show that when you withdraw from school, you know, most don't go back. And I don't remember the exact statistics he quoted, but I'm sure, you know, he had he was really worried that, hey, I'd drop out of school and not go back.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
What I'm picking up is there were little betrayals you made to yourself and your needs. Little ones, micro betrayals, maybe a little trade-off here, a little trade-off there. Oh, I'll just do this major. Oh, I'll just do this thing, even though it's not really what I want to do, but it's not going to hurt me. And I almost imagine that just became a weight over time. And then you find yourself just not yourself anymore. And what stood out to me is you said you found your body saying to yourself, nothing, this isn't working for me. I'm just going to lay here in bed. I'm not motivated anymore. And then you did get up and you got up so that you could step into a big, messy, scary, empowering choice that had a bunch of mixed emotions. And I think that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was almost the first series later, I think, you know, because it was a couple of decades ago, I think it just really helped set the stage, have the courage to do things that might seem scary in the moment or risky. And maybe are not actually risky, because I think about risk, you can think of it as what are you going to lose or what's the risk, right? And I think it really taught me that maybe the way I was thinking about safety wasn't really accurate. I think sometimes I thought, if I make these choices, that is the safe route, the less risky route. And I think I was just realizing maybe over time that I thought I was playing it safe, but what I thought was safe was actually more risky for me and more harmful.
Yeah. How did you think about safety in those days that you were making the choices that maybe looked pretty good on the outside with a little teenage rebellion turn in?
Certainly there was the element of external perceptions versus what's going on inside. I do think some of that, for sure, from just the upbringing and the cultural, you know, in terms of growing up in a Korean immigrant household, being mindful of community and sort of the external image and what looks good on paper, or what looks good externally, and those pressures that I think parents in that community may put on their or have expectations. So I think some of it safety-wise was coming from that. And some of it was really a pure practical level. For me, growing up in a household where I knew my mom's story, you know, I knew that she was amazing at science, my worst subject, but it was her best. She wanted to be a physicist, right? And she said she wanted to be a physicist or she wanted to be a stage director. And I think she told me the story of back in the day in Korea, she immigrated here to the U.S. in the 70s, that she was told that, no, you can't go into those professions, right? And she ended up going into nursing, and she told me, I still remember her telling me she loved James Dean and James Dean movies and dreaming about coming to the U.S., right? So I think she came here to further opportunities and further her education. And I think in that era, the way many people were able to immigrate to the U.S. was through, it's like going into nursing, just the way some of the immigration laws were set up in that day, right? So for her, she became a nurse. And, you know, that was a joke in my family. You know, my sister and I think many different diverse types of nurses, right? But we certainly didn't think that my mom fit the profile of somebody who I love nursing and wanted to, was good at it.
She had to betray her passions too, just maybe for some different reasons.
Exactly.
And then you watched her do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she didn't work for a while. My dad and her owned a business, and then things didn't go well. And then with the recession in the 80s, right? And then when my dad left, and even leading up to that time when he wasn't really, you know, providing, and went back to nursing and renewed her license. And then I watched her working really hard the entire time, working 8 shifts, several days a week. Yes. And honestly, I think she had a lot of joy, interestingly. That's what I really appreciate about my mom, that I never saw that she was experiencing hardship. I don't know if that was intentional or that she just loved us so much that this was giving her, you know,
maybe there's a mix.
Yeah. And
but
so
it's nice to know that she did find joy and you could see that clearly.
I did. Yeah.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about, you said, I think that moment where you decided to chose you, it laid the path to some future choices. So how did that fast forward you in life, in your career, to do some things differently?
I mentioned earlier that may have been one of a combination of messy moments that really led to where I am today, doing things I love doing. Say there were other sort of turning point moments. Interestingly, I'd say the other one that comes to mind actually, again, involves my dad. So what I would say was my dad actually did not pass away when I was in college. And again, you know, all odds, he actually ended up surviving and lived another 10 years.
Wow. And I thought you said he had a 4-month prognosis or something.
That's what his healthcare providers had communicated to us children. And so that's what we had thought at the time. And we had a phone call with healthcare providers with him on the phone as well. And it was interesting that it turned out differently. And it was basically the second time that he had a similar prognosis, but this time the cancer had come back. It had metastasized. And interestingly enough, we later discovered that it was actually the same one, but it was just slow growing over 10 years, and that not all of it had sort of been removed. And so it continued to grow over that time. And at that point, I had gone through law school. I was at a big law firm, and I, again, had to make some decisions around what to do with my life and what to prioritize. And so at that point, I quit my job where I was to have a better lifestyle and spend some more time with my father. And he ended up living with me for about a year and a half when I lived in Manhattan. And that's actually when I met my husband, or started dating him, at least. We had met when we were much earlier. But and it was also a big change just going to a smaller place. And I think just prioritizing time spent and quality time with him and others was another point.
Did you use your decision-making tool or process?
Absolutely. And I have to say that just prioritizing people and relationships in my life was a thing that was, you know, emerging more and more and more, continues to this day. You know, I would say that I think one regret I had, but the reason it's not a regret is because I think I was able to make choices later so that it didn't end up to be a permanent kind of regret. But I always felt bad kind of just having been in college at that time and not being able to help my sister as much.
Because you still had a sense of obligation at that in your heart.
Yeah, I did. Yes.
Maybe but it's not just obligation. Maybe it's just, maybe it's caring. Maybe there's a different reframe. I don't know. How would you name it if it was an obligation?
Values? It's values. And could it be love languages? I've done it. I think
it could be, love for your sister, caring for your sister. It could be a love language of service. I don't know.
Yeah. Acts of service. That's our love language in our family. My brother lived in California at the time. The first time my dad got sick when I was in college, and my sister did as well. And she moved from the Bay Area to LA to be my dad's primary caretaker. My brother and sister, both people I'm super close to and really respect. That was just watching her in her 20s do that right after college and go through some of the things she went through when my dad was sick. And it actually, looking back, it actually resulted in her going back to get her requirements for school and ended up going to medical school, which she had thought about doing when she was in college and then changed paths and then changed her mind after the experience of my dad. And now she's a radiation oncologist. So it sort of is a full 360 where I think that experience really influenced her life path in that way. So
maybe she wondered what she would regret not doing and then signed up for med school.
Maybe. I consider her one of my closest friends in addition to my sister. We've had this exact conversations. Possible. Yeah.
But you never know. Maybe this will open a door to learn more. You never know. So Celine, as you think about how you have, these are whole human moments. Oftentimes in these podcasts, we talk just about the sanitized work version. I think people have been more and more brave. And I love the whole human stories because every leader that you look up to has a story that you don't wear on your sleeve, but it does influence how you show up with your family, with your loved ones, and with the people you spend a whole lot of time with in the office. So how does this influence how you show up with people from as a mom to as a coworker?
In terms of the life experiences I went through, I think it really influences how I view my role. So currently I head HR and I switched careers, and that may have been another sort of big pivotal moment.
Yeah,
for
from
me.
Lawyer to HR. Okay.
Yep.
I think it does happen.
It does. That's a switch. Yeah. And I think just given that I was focused in the employment space and labor and employment and had always worked so closely with HR as a client, huge giant leap, but it was definitely a big career change. And in terms of what will this lead to? I had no idea. It definitely makes me think about design, right? And as we're thinking about experience for people in the workplace and design it in ways that work for people and are more inclusive, just thinking through situations that people may be going through in their lives. I think the other thing that it really influenced was just openness to risk and doing things where we might not have a clear roadmap in this day and age. And especially in the function I'm in, it's really critical to take some innovative approaches. What I actually love about my function is just how much it's evolved, even in the last decade. And so for me, I think just how can we do things better with what we've learned to date and with we have on hand. And the more we see in social science research, for example, and the more we see in the analytics space and how that's been evolving, the more we can make informed decisions that really hit the mark and bring impact for the organization you may be in, and also for the people who comprise the organization. So really has impacted up in that way.
That's amazing. And I think that one of the things you said earlier about what would I regret not doing? It helped you to rethink what safe is. And you're talking about how do I navigate in a world that is constantly changing and your view on risk. So when you think about your view towards moving through a risky world with no clear roadmap, what is the thing that guides you if there's no roadmap?
What really helps is to have a lot of clarity around your values and what's important to you. And having clear line of sight into that and making decisions. So I'd say when I made the decision to change careers, it was an opportunity that presented itself sort of unexpectedly, again, like many things in life. So it came through a client and I had actually been embedded with them for a few months and worked with them, but in my capacity as a labor lawyer, not in HR. And the opportunity came up where there was an opening in the HR team, and head of HR at the time reached out to me And the funny thing is, when I got their voicemail, I thought they were calling about a project I was working on with them. It was my person's job, you know, and think in that moment, first, I know what to make of it per se, but the idea of moving to a function where I could be focused on proactive culture building or intentional culture design and do love being on the business side now, realizing that is more exciting to me in terms of the work and the types of things that you can, the impacts that you could potentially bring. At the same time, at that moment in time when I was making that decision and had an offer, I had no roadmap where I think if you know the legal profession, especially for me, I was in big law firms, sometimes embedded in-house and also had some in-house experience. But at the time I was in, it's a very clear ladder in terms of your career progression. So you have a pretty clear map in many ways in terms of I have to do X, Y, Z to get to this next rung. So to leave that certainty or supposed certainty, right? And to move to a completely new field where I was taking a pay cut at the time. And I also head of HR at that time, right? And so I didn't even imagine that I would ever be in this role to lead the HR function. That wasn't even in my imagination at that moment in time. And so I just thought, hey, here's what excites me, right? And here's my values in terms of building workplaces, being able to do work around that on compliance and what's compliant, right? To some of the values you want to instill in your organization, right? Behavior alignment with that. And what excites me and has always excited me is seeing people grow and development. So having the opportunity to be design some of those programs, supporting people's growth and development. I didn't grow up in the recruiting space, but I can't tell you the gratifying, it's this excitement when you see a match between what the business needs and the talent and what individual who's coming into a role brings and wants for themselves for their own career. Feeling of that match is like, to me, so fulfilling.
Powerful. I think that we just came to a really interesting point because through your story, you were talking about these culminating moments where you were compliant with what was expected, compliant with these things. But every time you were compliant, you might have been giving away a little bit of something that was important to you. And you've moved from strictly compliance to living in line with your values. It's gone through how you made big decisions for big life events with your dad, choosing a career that wasn't probably the one that had the roadmap or wasn't what was what you expected in the first place. So you've really moved from compliant to a values-driven life. And that's a beautiful story.
I love the way you summed that up. Thank you.
Yeah, it really stands out to me what your life has evolved into. Living into your values seems like a really important way to navigate the unknown, and congratulations for finding it. If you were going to give advice to somebody 15 years earlier than you that didn't have the value of hindsight that you do now, what would you share with them?
Lean into the fear.
Easier said than done. But I love the idea. Lean into the fear. Give yourself a little bit of a, I don't know, courage boost.
I do think fear is a sign of growth or a growth opportunity, and within reason, right? Analyzes, you want to always prioritize safety, but true safety. I do really think that it could be a sign that it could be an opportunity where you could really benefit or grow from something. I think there was a talk I saw from an employee at my last organization who had been at the organization since she was an intern, grown to a host, very visible on broadcast, live broadcast. When she decided to leave the organization, she met employees and had an all staff, and it was a really powerful conversation. And one of the things she shared was that she realized that she really wasn't feeling scared anymore. And she was doing work-related, where even we'd go live on the air, that a new opportunity presented itself and that she was feeling scared in some ways. And to her, that was a sign that an opportunity to grow. And if I look back on my life, I think the moments where I made important decisions that, looking back, were really instrumental to my own growth opportunities, I would say that there was always a little bit of that.
So don't play it safe. Lean into some of the fear and you'll find a way forward if you live into your values.
Absolutely.
Saylin, thank you so much for sharing so generously with us. Where can people find you if they want to reach out and learn more?
They can find me on LinkedIn. Reach out
under Saylin Hong, and we'll put all your information in the show notes. I'm so grateful that you spent some time with us today and really shed some light on what it means to rethink what living it safe and compliant looks like so that you can live into your values and live a values-driven life. One that reshapes how you show up and the joy that you find. So thanks again, Saylin, for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode with Saylin Hong, I invite you to follow the show, Transformation Unfiltered. You can like us and you can subscribe. You can find us on any podcast platform.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.